Good morning. This is Bob Mann in for Jim Inkster, who is off today. On this morning's show, Jan Mueller, head of the Louisiana Budget Project, he'll discuss the controversy over whether Governor Bobby Jindal balanced last year's state budget with a surplus or if he ended the budget year with a $140 million deficit. We'll also ask Jan about two very important proposed constitutional amendments on the November 4th ballot. And we'll hear from one of the more popular political bloggers in Louisiana today, Lamar White. Lamar is not only a smart observer of Louisiana politics and policy, he became embroiled in the Texas governor's race earlier this week. In the last several years, Lamar has attracted a wide following across Louisiana with his writings about politics. We'll discuss Louisiana's U.S. Senate race as well as next year's governor's race with Lamar White. All of this on today's show, but first the news from NPR on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Bob Mann in for Jim Inkster, who's off today. We're joined in studio this morning by Jan Mueller, who is the director of the Louisiana Budget Project, which monitors and reports on state government spending and how it affects Louisiana's low to moderate income families. Jan Mueller is an award-winning journalist, formerly with the New Orleans Times-Picayune State Capitol Bureau, where he covered the state budget, healthcare policy, higher education, and races for Louisiana governor and U.S. Senate seats. Prior to that, Jan covered local and national politics at the Las Vegas Review-Journal and co-authored with Jack Anderson the syndicated Washington Merry-Go-Round column that appeared in more than 300 newspapers around the country. An investigative reporter, Jan Mueller's work led to reforms in Louisiana's nursing home regulation and uncovered ethics violations by city officials in Nevada. He's a graduate of American University in Washington, D.C. Jan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning. So the question that is dominating the Capitol this morning, there's a hearing going on right now. The Joint Budget Committee is meeting to determine whether Louisiana has a budget or a surplus from last year's budget year. What say you?
Well, that's the $319 million question going on right now. And I don't think we have all the answers yet. I'll be looking forward to seeing what the committee finds out today. What we do know is that last Thursday, late in the afternoon, the administration announced that they had $179 million surplus at the end of the fiscal year. And this came as a surprise to those of us who followed the budget because we kind of knew that revenues were flat. At the end of the year, they were actually taking out loans, short-term loans, in order to meet their obligations to higher education. The budget numbers just weren't coming in as they anticipated. So, but here they said they had a surplus, which seemed like good news. The next day, Treasurer John Kennedy comes out and says, no, the only reason they have a surplus is because they changed the accounting rules, and they're using a different method of accounting than they normally have, and we actually finished the year with a $141 million deficit. The difference between these two numbers is $319 million, and that's been the subject of debate now for an entire week. I think what we do know is that there is $319 million sitting in a state account somewhere, and that possibly, if legislators choose to, could be used to offset the massive shortfall we face in next year's budget. You know, once again, year after year, even though our economy is picking up steam, we're having trouble balancing the state budget. And so, obviously, the governor's office would like to use this $319 million to help offset this shortfall. But I think a lot of legislators are raising eyebrows and saying this is a case of shady accounting, and we're not really sure if this is really what you say it is. So they're trying to find that out right now, and I'll be looking forward to watching the hearing later.
So we're talking with Jan Mueller, the director of the Louisiana Budget Project. If you'd like to join our conversation and ask a question of Jan, the number to call is 225-297-5633. So what kind of questions do you anticipate Christy Nichols and other administration officials will be getting this morning? Are legislators going to be suspicious of this, or are they supporting the administration's contention there is a surplus?
I think legislators, they have a history, at least, of reluctantly going along with what this administration wants, because there's two problems here. They have this pool of money that they suddenly found, and this is kind of how this administration has been balancing the budget for years and years now. You know, every year we have this structural deficit in Louisiana, this gap between sort of the revenues that come in year to year and the minimum level of services that citizens expect. And so we have this debate every year about how we're going to fill this gap. And the administration has been taking these increasingly desperate measures because they don't want to raise the revenue. They don't want to raise taxes. So they find these little tricks. They pull these rabbits out of a hat every year. It's been tax amnesty one year. One year they sold government buildings to raise temporary cash. They drained the fund balance in the Office of Group Benefits to help pay for this. There was a nursing home trust fund, $800 million. They burned through that. And now they found $319 million. So I think the and John Kennedy was on record this week as calling it a slush fund, a secret slush fund. I certainly never knew this money was there. I don't think legislators knew this money was there. At the same time, they have a $1.2 billion shortfall in next year's budget. And if you don't use some of this money to plug in there, that's going to mean cuts to critical services. And they don't want to cut services in an election year any more than Governor Jindal wants to cut services in an election year, because we've already cut this budget to the bone. This is a bare bones budget already. There have been cuts to programs across the board. You work at a university, Bob. You've seen the budget cuts up close, how it affects teachers there. More than 1,000 professors have lost their jobs in this state since this governor took over. Money for child care assistance, poor moms who want to go to work, has been cut by more than 60%. Money that helps subsidize child care for poor working parents. So we've had a lot of cuts, and I don't think going into a statewide election year, legislators are going to want to cut. So I suspect they'll find a way to use this money, but I think they're also going to have some very pointed questions for the administration on this.
Now, what Treasurer John Kennedy and the legislative auditor and the legislative fiscal office have to say about it also has some bearing. Also, the revenue estimating conference, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. There are two people who are critical here. It's the legislative auditor's office that prepares the comprehensive annual financial report that's due in January. That's Daryl Perpera, and he has said on the record this week, we're not going to know until we audit the books and we find out if this surplus is real or whether we finish the year with a deficit. And there are rules. If you finish the year with a deficit, by law, you have to fill that gap. You know, we can't run a debt in this state the way the federal government can. And if there's a surplus, there are rules governing that. And again, the revenue estimating conference and Jim Richardson, the economist on there, who's been on there a long time, I think he's regarded as a very straight shooter. Those two are going to have a lot to say about this, and I suspect there will be some conversations between the administration and those two in the weeks and months ahead. But at this point, we just don't know what's going to happen to this money.
So the question whether there is a pot of money, as John Kennedy called it, a slush fund yesterday or the day before yesterday, a slush fund, this pile of money that was sitting there undetected that no one knew about, or maybe some people in the Jindal administration knew about, is it a question between whether there was a pile of money or whether the Jindal administration changed the accounting methods to make it appear that there's more money? Which is more likely?
John Carpenter, the legislative fiscal office, who's another straight shooter in this, said that there is a pile of money. So the money exists. Now, nobody's been able to say exactly where it exists. They're saying that these are leftover fund balances. And the state has hundreds of little funds that they squirrel away, and I don't think anybody has a real good accounting of where they are. But I think this money exists. The problem is we're talking about $319 million, and if you take that amount of money, somebody's going to miss it. Every single fund in state government is there because somebody wants it there, and they want to protect their little pot of money that maybe they generate that money from fees, or there's some way that money got there and somebody who wants to keep it. So if they're saying we're going to take $319 million and spend it on Medicaid or general government or something else than its intended purpose, eventually somebody's going to miss it. And the administration has been asked now for a week, tell us where you found this money. They haven't been able to come up with an answer. Maybe they have an answer right now. Maybe they're telling that to the Joint Budget Committee as we speak, but I don't know where this money came from, and I think that's what legislators are going to want to know.
We're talking with Jan Muller, the director of the Louisiana Budget Project, about the debate over whether there's a surplus or a deficit in last year's Louisiana state budget. If you'd like to join the conversation, have a question for Jan about this, the number to call is 225-297-5633. So in the response of the back and forth between Christy Nichols, the commissioner of administration, Governor Jindal's top budget person and the state treasurer, John Kennedy, there's the allegation that Kennedy should have known that the money was there, that it was Kennedy's fault. Is there any credit? Is that a plausible argument that Kennedy somehow should have known this $300,000 was there and missed it?
I think that's a kind of a convenient scapegoat here. And again, I'm not at the hearing right now, so I can't tell you what Kennedy knew or should have known. I don't know if I buy that explanation, but I think that if I'm in the administration, I'd be pretty irritated with the treasurer at this point, because he's made it a point to be a real thorn in the side of the Jindal administration on these fiscal issues. So I'm not surprised at the back and forth. That's actually been going on for years between this treasurer and the governor's budget office.
So the end result of this is that, or the political implications of this for Bobby Jindal is that he is running for president, clearly, about to, and already on the campaign trail, going out campaigning for people in these midterm elections, and he has a story he has to tell about his leadership in Louisiana and the way he's run Louisiana government, and that involves balancing a budget every year, even though, as you've described, they haven't always been pretty, but they've always been balanced. Is that part of this?
Yeah, I think the optics of running a deficit in state government, if you're out there running for president and talking about this alleged Louisiana miracle, would be terrible for Jindal. So it's certainly in his political best interest to say we are now finishing the year with a surplus. But again, I think I'm astounded that this budget is still having shortfalls year after year. They still can't find a way to balance it, and they still have to pull a rabbit out of their hat every single year. I mean, it's different rabbits, but every year they have to find some trick, some little cute way to bridge that gap between revenues and expenses. And I think the next governor, whoever he or she is, we'll need to put this budget on a sustainable path, and I think that's going to involve a conversation about revenues. Nobody wants to raise taxes. It's not a pleasant thing to do, but I think we need to have that an adult conversation about what we can afford and what level of services we expect, and this governor has just refused to have that conversation now for 7 years.
So we hear on one hand from Bobby Jindal and his Secretary of Economic Development, Stephen Morey, that Louisiana's budget economy is on fire, that we are blowing and going, that our economy has never been stronger, and yet we can't raise enough revenue to balance the budget year after year. How is that possible?
Part of it has to do with all the tax breaks we've been giving away. We have hundreds of tax exemptions and credits built into the state budget. There's some economists who say that some of these big projects coming online, we've spent so much money in tax incentives to attract these projects that it's actually a fiscal net loss from the state. We have programs like the film tax credit, which is on track to, I think, cost us about $300 million this year. So we give a lot of money away through the tax code, and we frankly are not raising enough money to keep a basic level of government services. I think that's just a huge part of this governor's story.
We have a call from Jim on I-10. Good morning, Jim. You're on the Jim Inkster Show.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to point out that there shouldn't be any debate over whether or not this administration is being truthful, for the simple reason that this particular governor has been acting like he's the smartest boy in the room since he took office. He, if you recall, his original ethics gold standard for the country was almost immediately disclosed as something that couldn't be enforced. I think what we have here is somebody who thinks he's smarter than anybody else and doesn't mind how he tries to show it.
Is that the problem, the governor's arrogance?
I wouldn't call it arrogance, but I think Stephanie Grace, the columnist for The Advocate, hit on something in her column talking about this budget issue, and she said, you know, what's astounding is the level of mistrust between the administration and a lot of people who normally would be allies of a Republican governor. Legislators don't seem to trust him. Other statewide elected officials don't seem to trust him. There seems to be a real gap between this kind of the governor and the close-knit circle of advisors he has around him and everybody else in state government. And that's a problem for this governor, I think.
His commissioner of administration, Christy Nichols, seems to have a pretty profound credibility gap with the legislature.
Absolutely, and I think that's not just about this budget, the latest deal, but I think a lot of it goes back to the Office of Group Benefits. You have 230,000 state employees, retirees, and family members. I hear the music playing, so I should probably.
Yeah, we want to. I don't want to leave. When we come back, I want to talk about the Office of Group Benefits and what's happening there. We'll be back in just a moment with Jan Mueller.
Okay.
You're listening to The Jim Inkster Show. I'm Bob Mann, in for Jim Inkster, who's off today. We're joined in studio this morning by Jan Mueller, the director of the Louisiana Budget Project. We're talking about state budget and various aspects of how we pay for government services and how we raise the money to do that. If you'd like to join the conversation with Jan Mueller, the number is 225-297-5633. Jan, let's turn to the Office of Group Benefits, which is the office that Governor Jindal privatized a few years ago, along with the legislature that handles the state insurance benefits for state employees and retirees. At one time, it had a $500 million surplus or reserve account, and that money is almost gone. What happened to it?
Well, the administration, the short answer is the administration blew through it. What happened was when they privatized it, like you said, they decided to, I guess, artificially lower the premiums for state employees, their families, and retirees. And what that meant was they lowered premiums, I think, by about 8% one year, about 2% the next year, because they had this reserve fund that they were then starting to slowly drain. And this made the state's budget problems that year seem a little less bad than they would have been otherwise. Now that reserve fund is almost gone, and the group benefits office is paying out, I think, about $16 million more every month than it has coming in through premiums, and so something has to be done. And what they're going to do is they're going to dramatically raise costs for people who are in this benefit plan, and that's going to mean higher premiums, higher out of pocket costs for 230,000 people going into an election year for legislators. And again, this is, like I said, I think it's one of the many ways that they've tried to balance the budget. But I think in this case, there's some real world costs to this, and where they're being felt right now. And legislators are asking a lot of questions.
And a lot of state workers are very worried about whether they're going to have any kind of decent health insurance this time next year.
Absolutely. I mean, if you get sick and you're a state employee, it's going to cost you a whole lot more to go to the doctor. If you end up in the hospital, it's going to cost you a lot more. If you need prescription drugs, it's going to cost you a lot more. And again, these are people who've worked hard for the state, whose families have worked hard for the state, who've in many cases had long careers and worked hard and thought they had earned a benefit, and now that benefit is being taken away, or the costs are increased. And I think mostly because they had a short-term budget problem to solve a couple of years ago, and now the price for that is coming due. And again, this is another one of those rabbits they pulled out of a hat to avoid having an honest conversation about revenues and expenses.
Dan in downtown. Dan, you're on the Jim Inkster Show.
Yes, Doug. Do you think that this constant budget problem is because right-wing ALEC and no new taxes, no matter what Grove and Norquist calling the shots in the Louisiana and other state legislatures and Republican primaries for president?
I don't want to blame specific outside groups. I mean, this governor made the decision that he wasn't going to support any revenue increases on his watch. And I think we're seeing the effects of that. We've been seeing the effects of that from year one. I mean, he came in and there was $1 billion surplus. In year two, or about 8 months into his administration, we had the worst recession since the Great Depression. That was not Bobby Jindal's fault, and we had massive budget problems as a result. And Louisiana had those. Every single state had those. We didn't raise revenues. Maybe that wasn't the right time. Then we started to dig out of the recession. Our economy started to get better. Our unemployment rate fell, but our budget problems still persisted. And that's because we have a structural imbalance in our budget, our structural imbalance in our tax system. And that's what I think we need to fix. It's one thing to run a deficit, a shortfall, when the economy is in crisis. That you kind of expect that, but when the economy is going well, you should not have a $1.2 billion shortfall. And I think that reflects poorly on the policy choices made by this governor and by this legislature.
Dan, thanks for the call. Jan, I know that the budget project has some concerns about a couple of the proposed constitutional amendments that will be on the November 4th ballot, particularly Amendments 1 and 2 that are somewhat related. Can you explain those to us and why do you oppose them?
Well, we are concerned about those two amendments, particularly Amendment 1. These amendments, you know, one of the groups that has not been cut, have not seen many budget cuts in the last few years is the nursing homes, the nursing home industry. They are supported by Medicaid dollars. And what this amendment would do essentially is lock up and say that you cannot cut funds for this for nursing homes or hospitals under any circumstances. That sounds like a good idea on the surface. The problem is, right now, we have about a $25 billion budget in Louisiana. Only 11% of that is truly discretionary state general fund. So we already lock up a lot of money in our Constitution. This would make that problem worse. And the problem is, that's going to put additional pressure on the things that aren't protected, mainly other healthcare services that aren't nursing homes and hospitals. Things like doctors, things like home and community supports for elderly and people with disabilities, and most notably, higher education. Colleges have been cut in Louisiana by $700 million the last 6 years. We've had the highest higher education cuts in the country, and now we're going to say we're going to tie the hands of legislators even more with these two amendments by putting in the Constitution that you cannot cut rates for two very specific groups of healthcare providers, and we just think that's a mistake. Legislators need more flexibility, not less flexibility, and we shouldn't be putting nursing home rates in the Constitution.
So the idea of creating these trust funds for hospitals and nursing homes and these other providers is not necessarily a bad idea. It's just locking in the floor that they can't, that the contributions from the state can't go below this.
Yeah, I mean, right now it takes a majority vote to pass the budget, but if you wanted to do anything to tamper with the rates for these providers, these two very powerful groups of healthcare providers, you would need a two-thirds vote in the legislature, which is practically impossible to get. So you're saying that we're going to use this constitution of this state to protect a specific group of healthcare providers at the exclusion of everything else and everybody else. And it's particularly bad for the nursing homes because, frankly, every single poll that's been done shows that people, as they age, especially this generation, wants to stay at home as long as possible. And this is an industry that is rapidly losing market share. Now, I don't blame them from going to the legislature and saying, hey, we need a little protection. We're losing market share. I blame the legislature, frankly, for going along with this. And I'm astounded that so many conservatives have supported this because, you know, Medicaid is this giant program. It's one-third, roughly, of the state budget. And it's going to make it much tougher to deal with this entitlement program in the future if the voters of the state pass these amendments. So we're very concerned about flexibility. We're very concerned about the effects on other parts of the state budget besides nursing homes, especially when people want to stay in their homes as long as possible.
Before we let you go, Jan, let's take a call from Donald in Mid-City. Donald, you're on the Jim Inkster Show.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good.
Yes, I have a question, a couple of questions and observations. One, I know I'm familiar with the surplus, and I realize that he shut down the Vision Administration and things like that. But my question is, well, what about all of these tax credits that are being given out? Are they really paying off? Are they paying off? And even some of these private medical entities that's been privatized, I understand that he's been finagling with the budget, and there's been a big dispute against Treasurer, with Treasurer Kennedy and other people who are looking at it, and it's just not your typical way of balancing the budget. And I'm afraid when he's no longer governor, the truth is going to come out, and Louisiana is going to be in real dire straits financially.
I agree with much of what your caller said. Tax credits are a problem. They've been growing year after year, and they take more and more money out of the budget, and that makes it tougher to fund our core priorities. And these tax credits, the spending we do through the tax credit, we've called it the hidden state budget, because you don't really see it on a balance sheet the same way you see the money we spend on education, the money we spend on general government and state agencies. So that's a real drain on revenues, and that's something the next governor is going to have to address. I mean, I've been talking about the administration pulling rabbits out of the hat every spring to try to balance this budget. They're going to run out of rabbits soon, and I suspect the rabbits are going to run out right around the time the next governor takes office.
Jan, thank you so much for being with us. We'll be interested to see your analysis of this joint budget committee hearing today and whether we have a surplus or not. We thank you for being with us today.
Bob, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day. We're joined now on the phone from Dallas by Lamar White, the creator and author of the very popular Louisiana political blog, CenLamar.com. That's CenLamar.com. Lamar White is a native of Alexandria, Louisiana, a graduate of Rice University who came back to Alexandria and worked for several years as a top aide to Mayor Jacques Roy. Lamar is in his final year of law school at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, which makes it so interesting that he has become one of the leading voices in politics and as a blogger in Louisiana from Dallas. 8 years ago, he started his blog, CenLamar.com, and in those years, it's grown tremendously to the point that he is one of the most widely read and respected political commentators in Louisiana. He also writes for the Independent of Lafayette and is really one of the best minds commenting about Louisiana politics today. We're honored to have him with us. Welcome, Lamar.
Hi, Bob. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Before we get into Louisiana politics, I want to ask you about how you found yourself embroiled in the Texas governor's race this week. The Democrat Wendy Davis is running against the Republican Greg Abbott, the attorney general, and he's disabled. He is in a wheelchair. Our producer, Frank Barnett, is going to play for us now the audio of this very controversial TV commercial that Wendy Davis, the Democrat, went on the air with a few days ago. And before we hear it, I should note that the spot opens with a picture of an empty wheelchair. Let's hear that spot.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott. He sued and got millions. Since then, he spent his career working against other victims. Abbott argued a woman whose leg was amputated was not disabled because she had an artificial limb. He ruled against a rape victim who sued a corporation for failing to do a background check on a sexual predator. He sided with a hospital that failed to stop a dangerous surgeon who paralyzed patients. Greg Abbott, he's not for you.
So the spot ran, and I gather it was not well received by Republicans or Greg Abbott, was it?
No, it was not. But as far as how I got involved in this, I had not even read the critical reception. I just saw the ad for the first time last Saturday, and a friend of mine who works on the Davis campaign called me up and asked me, I guess your listeners should know that I was born with a disability, cerebral palsy. So an aide with the Davis campaign called me up and just asked me what I thought of the ad as a disabled person, and I told him I was actually thankful that they had run this ad because it was about time that the voters of Texas realized this man's hypocrisy on the issue of disability rights. What the ad didn't say that I think that should be noted is that Greg Abbott, not only they listed some cases that he was involved with, but it's not just that. I mean, for the last 30 years, he's, or 25 years at least, he's opposed the Americans with Disabilities Act. And there's a series of other things in his record that are suspect. So he asked me what I thought, and I told him what I thought. It was great. I wasn't offended by the image of a wheelchair like so many other people were. And fast forward to Monday, I somehow found myself speaking at a Wendy Davis press conference in Fort Worth, which got a lot of press.
And it particularly got press, not so much because of what you said, but because of what happened as soon as you ended your brief remarks. And what happened and why did people criticize that?
Right. Well, you know, I have cerebral palsy, so I was concerned that if I stood up while I was giving my remarks, that there's a chance, as anybody that really knows me, there's a chance that I could have fallen down on camera. So I just asked them to allow me to remain seated during the remarks. They wanted me to speak first. And then they were going to have somebody help me lift me up and move me, sort of, you know, forcibly move me from the chair. And then I just thought, no, that's not a really good idea. There's a spot 3 feet away from the podium. If someone could just slide me over, that'd be great. Just come up to the chair and slide the chair, and I would help. And I thought it went seamlessly, frankly. But a series of Republican bloggers saw this little clip of me being moved and wrote articles about how I was dragged across the stage. I mean, literally, I was moved 3 feet, you know. I was assisted, in my opinion. It was a real shame. It focused on the awkwardness of my movements and attempted to say that the Davis campaign had somehow abused me or had messed up the stagecraft, you know.
Yeah, I heard the controversy about this, and before I actually watched the video of your statement, and the criticism of it sounded like they dragged you across the stage for about 30 seconds, about 100 feet, and in truth, it was just a very short period. I mean, just a very short distance next to the podium. It was it really was exaggerated, and among other people, Scott McKay, who runs the conservative political website here in Louisiana, The Hayride, called you a prop. They used you. You allowed yourself to be used as a prop.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate. I don't know Scott McKay. He's written a few things about me in the past. I'm not a big fan of his website, but I certainly, I was offended by that. And it's not that I don't know him. It's just the reason I was offended by what he said in particular is because his audience are my people in Louisiana, you know, my friends. And it's just a real shame. But I'll tell you on the other end of this, although people like Scott McKay, who never met me before, frankly, wouldn't recognize me if they saw me on the street, presume to know more about my disability than I know about it myself. It has galvanized support around this issue, and I think it's raised a lot of awareness about disability rights. So there is a silver lining to being criticized here, which is that, you know, in the last 4 or 5 days, literally thousands of people have reached out to me, and it's been nice. It's been really nice to see that so many people understand this issue. When you put a human face on it, it's hard to deny someone's humanity. I mean, that's what they tried to do, but it just, people that know me know I'm not going to give up easily on this issue.
Before we turn to Louisiana politics, I do want to ask you, though, the fallout, this spot is very controversial, people on both sides arguing about it. Has it helped or hurt Wendy Davis? I mean, she's in a tough race. She's running behind. Is this the kind of thing that will help move her closer to Abbott in the polls?
Well, I believe that, you know, initially there was a lot of criticism, of course, about the empty wheelchair. And I think, in hindsight, I think they could have done it a lot better. I mean, if they had placed an image of, instead of an empty wheelchair, if they had put the image of Greg Abbott himself in his wheelchair to begin the ad, I don't think anybody would have been complaining. I think the image of an empty wheelchair was somehow shocking to people. But I'll tell you this, in the last week, the conversation has moved from just the imagery of the ad to the real substance and the policy issue, which is good. And I think that has shifted the dynamic a little bit in favor of Wendy Davis. Now, we have 18 days until the election, so it's running down to the wire. I don't know if she can make up the difference in the next 18 days because it's a big difference. But I think that the more she focuses on the real issues here and the less distracted we are by the whole optics, the better chance she has.
Is the spot still running?
The spot is still running, and my understanding is that they're going to run another spot in the next week or so that's going to focus on his lack of support for the Americans with Disabilities Act.
So
they're not giving up on this issue.
So in the 30 seconds we have left before we go to break, are you planning on doing anything else with the campaign, or is that just a kind of a one-off thing?
Well, I think that was a one-off, but, you know, I've told them whatever they need. They're not paying me anything, I'll tell you that. I volunteered to do this, and you know, I'm just happy to be out in front of this issue.
We're talking with Louisiana blogger Lamar White, and we'll be back with a conversation about Louisiana politics after this brief timeout on WRKF 89.3 in Baton Rouge. You're listening to the Jim Inkster Show. I'm Bob Mann, in for Jim, who's off today. He'll be back on Monday morning. If you'd like to join the conversation this morning with blogger Lamar White, the number to call is 225-297-5633. Lamar, you write a lot about Louisiana politics, almost exclusively about Louisiana politics, in your very good blog, cenlamar.com. That's cenlamar.com. And the very big topic in Louisiana political circles these days is this U.S. Senate race between Mary Landrieu, Rob Maness, and Bill Cassidy that'll be happening on November 4th. Where do you see the race?
Yeah, this is the fun stuff for me, by the way. Well, I see the inevitability of a runoff here, and I know that may disappoint a lot of Democratic listeners, but I just think that it's going to be difficult to make up the ground in the next 18 days. However, I don't think that the conventional wisdom is correct that just because there's a runoff means that the Republican has a larger advantage than he would otherwise. I think that Landrieu's proven over her career the ability to squeak through in some tight elections, and that in December it will be no different.
So the latest polls show her in the runoff, the most recent one that I saw yesterday, down by about 9 points, with Cassidy sitting at 53. And I know, as you pointed out, it's a long way to not even to the runoff, but to the primary election. But how does assuming that poll is correct, and it does comport with some other polls that show Cassidy pretty close to 50 or over 50%, how does Landrieu shake up what seems to be or undermine what seems to be an advantage for Cassidy for whatever reason?
Well, I think that there are two things here. You know, the first thing is that Bill Cassidy is sort of running, I think Stephanie Grace pointed this out the other day, that he's running as sort of the generic Republican, and there's not a whole lot of personality there in his campaign. He's running really against President Obama, and a few weeks ago Bill Clinton said this in Arkansas, which is that the hoax of this election is that they want you to vote for somebody to protest for 2 years. It's a six-year term. So the other side of that is Senator Landrieu has, you know, has a lot of clout and a lot of seniority, and to give that up would be to lose about a generation's worth of seniority for Louisiana. I've talked to some folks in the oil and gas industry who say that her chairmanship is worth about 30 years of experience, and it took her 17 years to get to that chairmanship. It would take 30 years for someone else to get to it from Louisiana because of the age of the Senate right now. So I think that's her strongest suit, which is that that she's a fighter for Louisiana, and that she's got experience that we just can't afford to lose in the Congress.
So you know, talking about your clout, it sort of implies your seniority, that you've got clout because you've been there a long time, and it seems to me that's a bit of a difficult message. Maybe you've got to really thread the needle on that. Do you think she's done that? She's been able to say I'm worth a lot to this state without reminding people that she's been there 18 years.
You're right. It is. It's an interesting issue. I'm not sure if she's done it effectively. I wrote an article the other day for the Acadiana Business about this exact issue, because there's two sides to it. On the one side, well, actually, there's more than two sides to it. There's probably four or five. I mean, you've got on the one side reminding people that, hey, I've been here for a while, and you know, there's a lot of folks that don't believe in career politicians. And on the other hand, there are people that think that, environmentalists who think that she has not done a good job as chairwoman of the Senate Energy Committee. She's not hasn't done a good job on environmental issues. I tend to disagree with that, but on the whole, you know, I'm not sure how she balances it, though.
Yeah, it's a difficult task for any senior member of Congress or the Senate. We're talking with blogger Lamar White about Louisiana politics. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 225-297-5633. We have Jim on Goodwood. Jim, you're on the Jim Inkster Show.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I've been surprised that her campaign has not gotten the message out that Dr. Cassidy is a doctor who does not understand health care policy. He has repeated all the lines about the Obamacare that are not true. He gets away with it. It's really surprising. Now, people trust doctors. You have to show them that the doctor is not trustworthy.
That does raise an interesting question. I've thought about this in the last couple of days. Why do you think that Landrieu? I understand that Obamacare is unpopular, but there are provisions of it that are very popular, including expanding Medicaid, which Cassidy and Governor Jindal refused to support. Why do you think that Landrieu is sort of? Do you think she's run away from that issue? Do you think she's used it effectively, the popular parts of Obamacare, as effectively as she could? I think we've lost Lamar. We're going to get him back. The question that I'm asking Lamar, is that and the concern that I think a lot of people have is that there are Democrats in running for re-election or running for election. For example, the incumbent Senator Kay Hagan in North Carolina, who has been very aggressive in defending Obamacare, or at least defending the parts of Obamacare that are very popular, including Medicaid expansion. And Landry sort of stayed away from that. We have Lamar back on the line. Lamar, do you think...
I am back on the line. Yeah. I don't know what happened there. Sorry about that.
I don't know if you heard the question, but I'm...
But I did. Okay. It was about the Affordable Care Act, correct?
Right. And my question more specifically was, should she be targeting the areas of the Affordable Care Act that are popular, like popular in Louisiana, like Medicaid expansion?
Right. I totally think she should. And if you look at polling on that, if you look at polling on the component pieces of the Affordable Care Act, everything polls really well. It's just the name Obamacare that doesn't poll well in Louisiana, because President Obama, frankly, has never polled well in Louisiana. But if you ask people if they support Medicaid expansion, an overwhelming majority of them do. If you ask people if they support coverage for people with pre-existing conditions, overwhelming majority of people support that. And the list goes on, keeping kids on their parents' insurance until they're 26. So, yeah, I think that she should be focusing on these issues. And moreover, I think there is a huge contrast between the successes of this program, of the Affordable Care Act, no matter what you may think about philosophically about the idea of mandating people to buy insurance. The program has proven to be relatively successful over the last year. But contrast that to JindalCare in Louisiana and how devastating it's been over the last few years.
Explain what you mean by JindalCare.
I just mean the mismanagement of Louisiana's healthcare system over the last 7 years. We've had hospitals closed throughout the state, the privatization of a lot of facilities. The fact that we haven't accepted Medicaid expansion dollars has left Louisiana out of receiving something like $17 billion over the next 10 years and providing coverage for probably close to 250,000 people. And then, you know, we've got this most recent controversy with the Office of Group Benefits, people's health care going up there, too. So I think that if you compare Jindal's record on health care in Louisiana to Mary Landrieu's record on health care in Louisiana, it couldn't be a bigger contrast.
We're talking to blogger Lamar White, who publishes the very popular Louisiana political blog, CenLamar.com, CenLamar.com, and we're taking calls. We have on the line Syl from Jefferson Terrace. You're on the Jim Inkster Show.
Yeah, good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
And thank you, Frank.
Did we lose Syl? Syl, you there? I think we lost Syl. We'll see if we can get him back.
Nope.
Syl? I think he's breaking up. So, Lamar, did you watch the debate the other night between Cassidy and...
I have not yet seen it. You know, I've been so distracted by all this Texas stuff, but I know that it's online, but your listeners may want to know that. I just saw that PBS had uploaded it to their website, the entire thing, so you can watch it for free online. I plan on doing that later.
Yeah, it was an hour, and there were three candidates on the stage, so they were very limited in the issues that they could talk about. So from what you've seen, and just in the general debate in this campaign, not just the televised debate, right, are there issues that Landrieu, Cassidy, the press should be talking about that they're not? Are we ignoring important issues in this race? Is the debate too narrow around a few issues?
Well, yeah, and it usually always is. You know, one of the issues I think that we've been avoiding is education. There's been a lot of focus on healthcare. There's been a lot of focus, and of course, you know, the way campaigns work, it's sort of whatever's in the news. So we've been focusing on ISIS and Ebola because that's been in the news. What I'd like to see is this election be more about Louisiana issues. I know that we're electing someone to go to the United States Senate, and that ultimately this could actually end up determining the balance of the Senate. So that it does nationalize the issue, or nationalize the election, rather, when you have the stakes are this high, right? But, you know, as always, I'd like for the Senate election to be more about the issues that affect the voters of Louisiana. Coastal restoration, another issue that probably has not been given the amount of ink space and time that it deserves, considering that, you know, the historic lawsuit that's now who knows what's going to happen with it. I guess it's been working its way through the courts to determine whether or not it can even proceed. But it seems to me that's an issue that needs to be explained to voters a lot more than it has. You know, in the voucherization of schools, the school vouchers, the privatization of schools, that hasn't really come up, as far as I can tell, it hasn't come up substantially or as significantly as I'd like.
You talked about the nationalization of the campaign, and if there's a runoff, and there probably will be, and if the outcome of the Louisiana Senate race is the race that determines control of the U.S. Senate, talk about nationalizing a race.
Gosh, that's the worst-case scenario for me.
Perhaps the worst-case scenario for Landrieu, too, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, it'd nationalize this election even more, and it would... you know, the amount of outside money that we would see being spent, I guess it would create a number of temporary jobs. So there's that. You know, one other issue I guess that I should have brought up that I didn't, that has not been talked about as much as it should, is same-sex marriage. You know, we've seen two different court rulings in the last couple of months that have gone both ways on the issue here in Louisiana. And it'd be interesting to hear from all three candidates about this more substantially than they have. I know it's a touchy subject, and especially in Louisiana, where it actually doesn't poll as well as it does throughout the country. But when you have 30-plus states that have already legalized same-sex marriage, we're not just talking about a civil rights issue anymore. We're talking about an issue of economic development and money. Because I think that Louisiana will lose out on projects and on companies that are looking to relocate because of this issue.
Yeah, at the end of the debate the other night, there was this lightning round of questions, including about legalization of marijuana and rating Jindal and Obama. It would have been nice if someone had asked the question about whether these candidates support legalizing same-sex marriage.
Right.
What do you think the Fifth Circuit is going to do with this appeal of Judge Feldman's position upholding Louisiana's same-sex marriage ban?
Well, it seems to me the conventional wisdom here is that the Fifth Circuit is going to agree with Judge Feldman because they're so conservative. But, you know, it's really all depends on which three judges are selected to write this opinion or selected to hear the case.
Is there any chance that the entire court would do that?
I guess there is always a chance, yeah.
That hasn't happened in any of the other appeals, has it?
No, yeah. I don't believe so. It's usually just three people, a three-person panel, three-judge panel. You know, I think constitutionally and legally, it's pretty clear to me that this should be considered a fundamental right. I've written about this before. The fact is, in Louisiana, you know, we recognize incestuous marriages between first cousins that occur out of state. We recognize common law marriages out of state, and all sorts of different things that we recognize. We recognize marriages between death row inmates. But if a loving couple from California gets married and has a child together and moves to Louisiana, we won't recognize their marriage. It's really a shame.
So let's turn now to the other big race that's going on in the state right now. It's the 6th district race to replace Congressman Bill Cassidy, who's running for the Senate, and thereby vacating his congressional seat. Among the candidates in the race with a host of Republicans is Edwin Edwards. I know you've interviewed him, you've spoken with him. How do you rate his chances?
Well, I think they've sort of surprised people by how strong the campaign has been, considering. It's just like the 5th district in a way. There's so many people in the race that it's kind of hard to predict what's going to happen. The polls have been everywhere. I think the general consensus is that Edwin is going to get in the runoff and that he would probably lose in a runoff. I think that's probably true, except the caveat would be if Lenar Whitney were his challenger, I think that he could probably beat Lenar Whitney heads up.
The very conservative state representative from the New Iberia area, right? I mean,
who was just endorsed by Tony Perkins.
Yeah. Tea Party sort of describes herself as the Sarah Palin of the South. And why do you think she's so vulnerable why do you think that voters in a very conservative 6th district, the 24th most conservative district in the country, would vote for Edwin Edwards over her?
Well, I just think that, you know, she has embarrassed herself on a national level with a few things that she said. I know that you could argue the same thing with Governor Edwards. He's also embarrassed himself on a national level. But But it just doesn't seem like she's too serious on the issues. The idea that you can disprove global warming with a normal household thermometer, which I think she said, is ludicrous. So she's anti-science very clearly, and I just think maybe she's a little too radical for that district, and it would be easy to get her on the issues. And I think pretty much everyone else that's challenging Governor Edwards on the Republican side is a credible candidate except for her.
So the race seems to be developing into one, perhaps, between Edwards and Garrett Graves, Governor Jindal's former coastal czar, who's raised a ton of money and is spending a lot of it on TV. Do you think that money is that money and his ability to advertise more than the rest gives him the advantage in the coming couple of weeks?
I absolutely do, and I actually think that the way they've slow played their hand here, the Graves campaign, has been very smart and very savvy. You know, he's polling in the single digits for a long time, and of course you probably knew, and I know I knew that they were raising money, tons of money, even though he was polling in the single digits.
Yeah.
But they just waited and waited and waited it out, and now they're blitzing, and it's working.
It seems to be a pretty smart strategy. Lamar, thank you so much for joining us. Lamar White, who is publisher of the very popular blog, sinlamar.com. Go check it out and read his work. He's a very good observer of Louisiana politics. We appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks so much, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. Have a good day. Thank
you
all.
You too.
Jim will be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. This is Bob Mann. Goodbye.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.